Welcome to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255.
Wow, this is like deja vu.
Deja vu, we're back on the phones, eh?
Gentlemen, back to the old technology. How are you, Paul?
I'm very good, Stevie. How are you, bud?
Couldn't be better. Frank, I know you're not necessarily wiser, but you're a little bit older. Are you still feeling okay to do the show?
I'm still feeling okay. I'm going to need your help, though, to help fill out the CPP form.
Have they got the elevator working in the building yet for you two old people?
How many weeks has it been since Paul's hasn't gotten a free breakfast for me, Steve?
I think we're at about 87.
Wow. 87, eh?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
God, I've saved 87 weeks worth of money. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with the time and money you save? What are you going to buy us, Paul?
Well, I was planning on buying breakfast, but I mean, it's 87 weeks. I haven't been able to buy breakfast. Yeah.
What are the odds that the three of us will be a little bit grayer when we get together again?
Oh, probably. Probably.
Paul is white. Yeah. Paul wasn't white when the show went on hiatus back in March of 2020. Every video I've seen, Paul is white.
it's because I have a little beard, boys. It's platinum, as my hairdresser calls it.
Platinum. Okay. Oh, that's what it is. He's doing his Santa thing.
Yeah, of course.
And as we get closer to Christmas, does this mean the market is pretty much stagnant, Paul?
Yeah, it's been pretty stagnant. Our listings are way down. We're in a very, very inventory-starved market. We're at 1,439 listings right now, active listings on the market, and about a third of them are condos. So it's very, very stagnant. We need listings really, really bad. I always take a look at the Barhavens, the Orleans, and the Kanata markets, because that's, you know, the three fastest moving, or most sales, sorry. That's where most of the sales happen. There's 177 homes in those three areas for sale, and there's 246 for rent. So we're seeing a huge influx of people putting rentals on the market, and there's nothing for sale on the market right now. So it's a tough, tough market to navigate. It's been a really tough 2021 in the way of, I was talking to one of my agents yesterday in the office, and he was saying, you know, he does a lot of buyers and he doesn't do as many listings. And he was saying that the first part of the market was a huge challenge for buyer's agents. And right now it's a huge challenge for listing agents because it's, you know, we had grumpy buyers in the first half because there, you know, so many offers weren't being accepted and they were going way over asking and people were losing out on deals. And it was really frustrating to work with buyers. And now it's starting to become very, it's a word I'm looking for, a bit of a pain in the butt actually working with sellers because, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to get their homes sold, but it's just such a listing starved market. We find a lot of buyers have pulled themselves away from the market now. So it's just a very, very stagnant market that we've been in for the last probably 3 months, but it keeps getting worse and worse. And I think it's probably because of the season. I mean, we're getting closer to Christmas, but, you know, the snow is about to fly. I think we're going to see people start to, you know, either take their house off the market or wait until January to put their house on the market. And we're starting to see that now. That's what's happening.
Yeah, but it turned a few months ago. So how do we explain that? It turned on a dime out of nowhere.
It did. So at the height of our average sale price was at the end of June when it was at $658,000. And since then, we've gone down every month, but not drastically. Right now, we're at the end of October. We're $647,000 is the average sale price. So we only went down $11,000 over the last, you know, 4 months. But it's still coming down, you know, and it's who knows when the numbers come out in November. We'll see where we are at that point. But yeah, I don't think, you know, we had a ways to correct anyways, because you've got to think at the end of 2020, our average sale price was $529,000. Now we're at $647,000. So yeah, it was a huge increase. And because we've regressed a tiny bit, I wouldn't panic. I mean, we're still in a very strong seller's market. I mean, there's only a 1 month supply of residential properties and 1.2 month supply of condos. So we're still in a very, very good seller's market, but it's just not what we saw at the start of 2021.
One thing not coming down are rates, right, Frank?
They're not coming down. The bond market spiked at the beginning of the week, thankfully came back down at the end of the week. So rates have remained unchanged from last week. But again, inflation numbers came in high. Again, the possibility of rates increasing, you know, the first quarter of, you know, maybe one more time, you know, another increase before the end of the year. And then the first quarter is still, you know, I would say 50-50. But
the prime rate you're talking about, Frank?
No, I'm talking about fixed rates. Prime rate, it feels like and sounds like it'll be Q2 of next year. It just everything is pointing towards that direction. But again, inflation needs to get back under control. And if inflation, and again, you look at what's caused the inflation, and there's a possibility of inflation getting back on track. So, once supply, comes back to us, because right now it's basically there's a lot of materials that are sitting in shipping containers, and that's creating some of the demand, the high demand that it's really normal demand, but because you're not able to get it, there's higher demand, and everybody's jacking the prices up a little bit, and hence people are paying more for things, and thus causing inflation.
You know what's funny, Frank, is I heard this week from two people that bought brand new homes, and both of them are delayed, and both of them are by big reputable builders who are never late on their closing dates. And both these builders were late on their closing dates and had to extend them, and mainly because they can't get supplies. So it's just weird to hear, because I haven't heard these two builders ever be late on a closing date, and now they are. And the reason was they basically said, sorry, we're just scrambling to get as many supplies as we can right now. They're stuck at the border in China in the water, half these supplies. So it was weird to hear, especially these two builders.
Boy, that's got to be tough on builders. Not only have they taken a hit from their selling price to where we are now they can't get supply.
Well, builders have been lining their pockets with money right now because of the average sale price has skyrocketed so much. And usually the new home builders are a little bit delayed behind the resale market. But I found during this pandemic, the new home builders actually were ahead of the curve when it came to the resale market and the average sale price. We had builders who were selling, townhomes for, $500,000 when the resale market was not even there, and it brought up the resale market, then the builders went higher, then the resale market came up. So the builders were actually at the forefront of this spike in the average sale price, I believe.
Frank, how does it work for getting a mortgage on a new home?
Well, again, I mean, in most cases, we're seeing, and some of the banks hopefully are honoring the rates that they gave clients, even though the closings may be delayed 6 months or 8 months. Now, again, it hasn't been a problem while rates have remained low. And, for people that bought it 2020 and early 2020, throughout 2021, the rates were actually lower than when they actually purchased in early 20, even mid 2020, rates have come down. Now, they started going up since February of this year. But, generally, most lenders have a one-year rate hold. Some builders will have agreements in place with banks where they get a year and a half, 2 years. I've even seen 2.5-year rate holds. But those rate holds are not the rates that you can get today. Basically, what the banks have done is they put a premium on those rates, expecting rates to go up. Now, what I'm hearing from some of my friends that work at banks is that the premiums have gone up because the expectation is there that fixed rates will go up. So where before the bank may have said, let's do whatever our fixed rate is less 2% and we'll hold that for a year. Now they're doing their fixed rate less 1% and they're holding that for a year. So, again, they're anticipating where rates are going to be. For most clients, what I would say is, listen, at least you have something in place. If your closing is a year and a half or 2 years away and the builder's got a deal with the bank, go ahead and sign up with that bank and at least take that rate. You're not obligated to stay with that bank as you get closer to your closing date. If there's better rates out there at that time, then you can start shopping around for a rate. But if rates have gone up tremendously and that rate is attractive, then at least you've got something to fall back on.
Boy, if you're going to buy a year and a half down the road, anything can happen.
Anything can happen on the rate and on the values too.
Listen,
it's gone the right way for anybody that's purchased in the last year. It's absolutely gone the right way where you're getting into a home now and you might be up 100, 150, 200, 250,000. But that doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen a year and a half from now. It may only go up. I don't think it's going to go down, but it may only go up 10, 15, 20,000. But it's interesting to hear some people thinking that the trend that just happened is going to continue, and they're buying it thinking that by the time they get it, they're going to be up 100, 200,000. And I try to temper their expectations to say, listen, this may have been a one-off. And I mean, your house might go up in value, but you may only be $20,000, $25,000 more. Don't count on 100, 150,000.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is totally a one-off. I don't think we'll ever see this in our lifetime again. Really, that was an abnormal year in real estate. But there's no chance that's happening again.
521-TALK, 521-8255. Hopefully, we'll be back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back with Paul Rushforth and Frank Napolitano. Here we talk about this being a one-off this past year and a half or so. It has never happened in the history of Ottawa real estate, has it, Paul?
No, never. I mean, the average sale price, probably our best year since 1956, was back in 73 when it went up 25%, but it went from 30,000 to 38,000. So I wouldn't even look at that. But, you know, let's say since 1993. So over those many years, our highest it's ever gone up was 14.1%, not including last year in 2020. It was 14.1%. It was in the year 2002, and it was at the average sale price is at 200,000. So that, you know, that was our biggest year on record. But besides that, last year in 2020, it went up 20%. You know, and this year we'll probably end up, I don't know, like right now where our average sale price is up 22.6%. I think we'll probably end up around the same thing, about the 20%. So 40% in 2 years for the average sale price increase is astronomical. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, when you consider generally we're like maybe 1.5%, right? 2%.
Oh, top. Well, yeah, no, we've gone up more than that. I mean, in the... You know, 2007, 8, 9, 10, we went up, you know, 6.5, 6.3, 4.9, 7.7. And then we got into the, you know, 2013. And those 4 years after that, 13, 14, 15, and 16, we went up 1.6, 1.2, 1.6, 1.2. So, you know, and then after those years, it was 5.5, 3.8, 8.4. So I think, you know, Ottawa would be steady at a 2 to 4% increase in the average sale price, which is what I think we're probably going to see in 2022. But then again, I would never have predicted what we've seen this year either. So it's hard to tell. But I do think we are going to increase. I know I get lots of people who are asking me right now. They're like, you know, with what's going on in the market and interest rates are about to, you know, rise, what is going to happen in 2022? And truthfully, I think we're going to have a flat year. When I say flat, I mean a small increase of 2, 3, 4%, something in that range is where I think we're going to be. So is it a good time to buy a home? It's a great time to buy a home because we will see a consistent increase year after year. The last time our average sale price went down was in 1996. It went down 1.9%. So wow. I'm not worried. I'm not worried about the Ottawa real estate market. There's other markets in Canada I'd be worried about. There's other markets around North America that I'd be worried about. But Ottawa's not an area that I really worry about.
Frank, how has it affected people's buying power, especially for first-time home buyers?
Well, obviously, I mean, hey, if prices go up that much, it's going to hurt you. There's no question. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we're seeing more and more people. Again, I mean, I'm seeing more and more friends call me and say they want to buy together because that's the only way they're getting into the market. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. I think that's going to pick up some steam where friends buy. We might even see, you know, I wouldn't put it by maybe two couples buying a home. If they're buying a four-bedroom home together, then they can kind of figure it out that way and at least build some equity and at least have a starting point. It's either that or else you're looking at condos, right? And I think, you know, reading more and more, it looks like condos have began to heat up a little bit only because there's first-time home buyers. That might be their best option to get into the market.
It might be their only option, right?
Well, oh, you're single,
absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I mean, go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, buddy.
No, you know, if you're single on a single income, it's really difficult to qualify for a mortgage these days unless you've got help from a family member, either on the down payment side or on the cosigner and or guarantor side. So, again, I mean, I think a condo, I mean, some condos are still out there in the low to mid fours with reasonable condo fees. And if that's the case, then maybe that's a starting point for some people. And I think Paul probably is seeing some volume on that side as well.
Yeah, we have, especially sort of terrace homes and suburbia condos. High-rise condominiums are still quite pricey. But, you know, you take a look at the average sale price of a condominium. For the longest time, we were hovering in the 260 to 280 range for the average sale price of a condominium. Right now, it's 419. You know, so they've actually increased a lot as well. But Frank is right. I mean, they're more affordable than a townhome and a freehold townhome or a single-family home. So we're seeing people turning to condominiums for sure. My only caveat I'd say would be make sure you are saving for condo fee increases, because they do increase, especially new condos where they come out and they say, you know, condo fees are, you know, whatever, they're going to be $500 a month and it covers this, this, and this. That's someone estimating what the building is going to take to cover a lot of these utilities. But usually they go up fairly quickly. So just make sure if you're buying a condo that you save for a condo increase probably in the first 2 or 3 years that they will increase.
Better off buying a new condo or an older one, Paul?
Well, you listen, a lot of the older condos, usually the condo fees are a little bit higher, mainly because things are starting to go. And so they need to save for, you know, decks and roofs and things like that. Whereas a new condo, those things are already, you know, brand new, and you don't have to worry about changing some of those things for quite a while. And usually they estimate, if they have a good management company, usually they estimate on the high side. So the condo fees, you know, you have enough to cover for a rainy day. But, you know, there's lots of old condos that are phenomenal buildings. And there's lots of new condos that are also phenomenal buildings. So I think it's just your appetite. I think if you're buying a terrace home, something in the, you know, within the next 5 years, something that's newer than 5 years would be ideal. But saying that, there's phenomenal condos throughout the city.
And when you're qualifying, Frank, they only consider half the condo fees, right?
Yes, half the condo fees. And again, I mean, you know, some condo fees include heat. So that's a little bit of a help as well, because otherwise, you know, every lender has a different calculation when it comes to heat, but we have to use heat to calculate as well. The general rule of thumb is anywhere between $75 to $100 a month. On a condo, closer to $75, and on a house, $100. And some houses, some of the lenders will, you know, if somebody's buying a 3,000 square foot home, they'll bump that up to $200 a month to qualify.
Still, you got to be careful with those condo fees, because you could buy a lot of house for what you're paying in condo fees, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You should see the condo, right? $500 condo fee. Pretty well equates to about $140,000 in mortgages. So
yeah,
between $120,000 and $140,000 on the mortgage side. So again, I mean, you got to take that into consideration. If you're going to go out and buy a condo that's $500,000 and you can get a townhouse for $640,000 freehold, you might be better off to buy the freehold, because again, from a cost standpoint, monthly cost standpoint, it'll virtually be the same.
Yeah, as long as you qualify, right?
Well, but again, you're right. The only difference that the qualification is only half the condo fee. But nonetheless, if you qualify for it, then I definitely lean towards that.
Yeah, and you probably do better down the road with that too, right, Paul?
Yeah, most likely. Absolutely. I just want to thank, you know, I think we're going to probably go to break here in a second, but I just want to thank my office manager, Angie White, my incredible office manager, Angie White, as she's sending me pictures of her getting on a plane with a beer in her hand going to Mexico. So I want to just want to thank her for really bringing my day down as she's doing that for me. You know?
Come on, aren't you happy for your employees, Paul?
Oh, I'm so glad she's going to be sitting on the beach within the next 4 hours as I'm sitting in this cold weather. Yeah, really happy.
Wait till the later pictures come. It's going to get worse, buddy.
Oh, trust me, I know it's going to get worse. And the pictures are going to get much blurrier, too.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Back with Paul Rushforth and Frank Napolitano. Frank, as these rates begin to creep up, does this mean that the posted rate is going to creep up as well?
You love doing that to me. Eh? You just do, eh? Posted rates don't change very often, unless there's something in it for the bank, or that's what it feels like. If the banks were a little more transparent, I think a lot of us would be happier. But again, we've seen fixed rates from February until today. They've probably gone up close to 1 percentage point, and the fixed rates have virtually remained unchanged at most of the major banks. So it's a head scratcher. I understand why they do it, not necessarily for the benefit of the consumer, but for their own benefit. But like, honestly, as rates have gone up, that means the discount is less. So there's actually a benefit for a consumer. And I hope they keep it this way. I hope they don't increase the posted rates, because right now the discounts that the customers are getting off the posted rates are less. So if something were to happen where they have to pay the mortgage off, the second, the third, or the fourth year, when with the big bank, when the penalties are at their highest point, there'll be a little bit less. There's still going to be, you know, it's still going to be painful, but it won't be as painful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand not going with a non-bank lender. You just have so many more options to get out of your mortgage for a lot less.
You do, and boy, have I got a story for you. I mean, one of my agents had a client this week who happens to be a real estate agent. So, you know, knows what they're doing, knows the market, reached out to our broker and got a rate lock in place back in early September because their mortgage was up in December. So the agent was able to secure them a rate of 1.89% for a five-year fix because that's what the rates were in early September. At the same time, the bank had sent them a renewal, which stated that they were willing to give them 2.39%. So clearly there was a 0.5% difference. Nothing from the bank until this week, because now the mortgage is up in 3 weeks from now. So the person calls and the real estate agent answers, the customer answers and says, well, I'm going with my mortgage broker. And this bank individual says, well, you understand that we're going to charge a discharge fee. Our bank's going to charge a discharge fee of $380,000 that you're responsible for. And the real estate agent says, yeah, but again, based on the rate. So now the rate offer is no longer 2.39 because the rates have gone up. They've offered 2.52%. So, you know, he says, why would I take 2.52 when I can get 1.89? That makes no sense. And this is a $350,000 mortgage. And the bank person says, but you got to pay a discharge fee of $380, and probably there's going to be legal fees. And then be careful because the broker's going to charge you a fee.
Wow.
And then they'll probably charge you an administrative cost if you want the property taxes included in the mortgage. These are all things, by the way, that the banks do, not brokers, but the banks do it. So just because they do it doesn't mean that we do it. So we are with, and you know, for anybody that's a banker that's listening, lenders like First National, MCAP, XMC, CMLS, they are not B lenders. They are A lenders. They are no different than you. They're and specifically, their mortgage options are better than yours, and their penalty policies are significantly better than yours. So I get a little tired of hearing bank people tell their customers that they're going to a B lender or a lender that's going to take advantage of them when they're actually the ones that are taking advantage of consumers.
That's just a lack of education, though, Frank. I mean, like, you know, I'm not going to say who I'm talking about, but you and I both know someone probably over the last 3 or 4 years that has left the bank to become a mortgage broker. And this individual was like, oh my God, I actually have to do some serious work now. Like, it's a lot harder. You got to actually hustle, you know? So it's just a lack of education.
You got to hustle, but you have access to more products. And once you start to learn the products that the other lenders have, they are absolutely phenomenal. And they, you know, the bank's mortgages pale in comparison to what these lenders are doing. And the crazy part of it all is that the lenders are getting these money, the monies to lend out from these banks. And that's the craziest part of all. So here's a bank person cutting down a lender that generally what's happening is that bank itself is actually funding that mortgage behind the scenes.
Yeah, but I never understood the, like, worst case scenario with a B lender that goes under, somebody's going to take it over and your deal stays the same, right?
Correct. You know, and listen, I mean, we haven't had any lenders go under in Canada.
Yeah.
And if lenders are in trouble, banks are sitting there right now with oodles of cash waiting to pick some of them up at the right price. So, you know, your mortgage isn't going anywhere. Nothing is going to happen. And a B lender is not a B lender. Again, I mean, I hate the term B lender. You know, we have three different types of lenders now that we work with as mortgage brokers. We work with your traditional institution. It could be a big bank like Scotiabank, CIBC, Royal Bank, or it could be First National, MCAP. They're on the same, as far as we're concerned, they're on the same level. They do the exact same. And like I said, most of these non-bank lenders, their mortgages are significantly better options than what the banks offer. So there's no question that there's, you know, those are traditional lenders. Then we've got alternate lenders. Alternate lenders are lenders that are about 1 to 1.5% more than what you would get at your bank. But it's because you don't qualify. It could be you've gone through a consumer proposal or bankruptcy recently and your bank won't touch you. It could be because you're self-employed and you don't show as much income. It could be because you've gone through a separation or a job loss and now you're on contract. Those those alternate lenders will work with you. Now, where it gets really tough with the alternate lenders is if you're buying a home with 5% down or 10% down if it's default insured. Those ones, everybody goes by the same rules. And I couldn't even tell you how many times somebody's called me and said, my bank told me to call you because you can help me. I'm buying a house with 5% down. I was bankrupt 4 months ago.
Wow.
And it's like nobody can help you.
Yeah.
Like that, the bank isn't saying no. It's the default insurers that are saying no. And then the third grade is the one that we are actively involved in, which is mix and private funding. And again, private funding is also available. So there's really three categories that we work with on a daily basis.
Hey, Paul, would this be a good time for me to bring up gas prices with him?
Get them worked up.
I'm going electric, so it's not going to bug me as much.
Yeah.
Paul, let me ask you this now. Over the next, let's say, probably month and a half, right, is probably going to be the slowest season for real estate.
Yep.
If you list your house now, you'll probably have fewer showings, but the people that are coming to look at your house are going to be serious about buying. So if you don't want to have a gazillion people through your house, not a bad time to list right now.
No, it's not at all. I mean, it's anyone coming to your house is a serious buyer. I mean, no one's coming through at Christmas to look at houses if they're not serious about buying. I mean, they're focusing on other things. So, yeah, I always say in this type of market, like when you get into the November, December, that's like Jan and early part of Feb, yes, you're going to have, you know, less showings, going to be less people looking, but there's going to be less competition because there's really nothing on the market. So there's going to be less competition and the people are serious. So it's definitely not. I mean, when someone tells me, oh, I'm going to wait till the spring market, I wouldn't wait. I wouldn't wait till the spring market. I get your house on now. Worst case scenario, you go a month, you're not getting the action you want. You take it off for the Christmas period. We put it right back on in January. I mean, but I would, there's a very good possibility that you can get your house sold now before Christmas and move on because there's not a lot on the market. I was doing research today on the market and, you know, there's nothing. I was looking in some areas of suburbia and there's like 9 residential homes for sale. And I'm just like, wow, there's nothing on the market. So yeah, if you're on the fence, you need to get your home sold. You're thinking you're going to wait until spring. I wouldn't. I'd get it on the market right now. And if you are, you know, if you're totally set on the spring market, I'd get that thing on in early January for sure. I wouldn't wait till March, April, May. I'd be getting it on as early as possible.
Yeah, to me, it'd be nice to go through the holidays knowing the deal's done.
Yeah, and like I said, the worst case scenario, you go till December 15th or December 20th, and then you either take it off, suspend it, so you can enjoy the Christmas period, and then we pop it right back on in early January. But we have another, what are we today? The 20th or something?
Yeah.
Like we still have another month of real estate before the market just really dries up. And listen, I've had people between Christmas and New Year's, we probably sell every year. We probably sell anywhere from 5 to 10 homes in that period between Christmas and New Year's. So it's definitely not a slow period at all. I mean, I've always said there's no bad time to sell a home. There's times where there's, you know, more people looking, like a spring market, there's going to be more people looking, but there's also more competition. There's going to be more homes for sale. Whereas now there's nothing for sale. There's less people looking, but there's nothing for sale. Get your house on the market, get it sold.
And not everyone celebrates Christmas.
Well, that's it. That's it. There's different cultures that don't celebrate Christmas. And, you know, we've had people request showings on Christmas Day before because they don't celebrate Christmas.
Sure. But yeah, like you said, that between Christmas and New Year's, when everybody's off, not a bad time to look for a house. You got the time.
You do. You definitely have the time. And I'll tell you what, some of the best philosophies I always had when I was practicing real estate, when I was actively doing it, was I work when people don't work. You know, when people aren't working in December and January, I position my year in December and January. So I work in those months. And I just think that there's no bad time to sell a property. There's no bad time to be looking for a property. There's just different stages in the season. So
yeah.
Yeah, if you're thinking of selling, I wouldn't delay. I would get your home on the market.
Not to mention, we got a small window right now where there's no snow, so it's going to show a little bit better, even though things are a bit brown.
It definitely will. It definitely will. This is the time of year, though, that people have to really work on their curb appeal because, like, you know, I'm looking at my house right now, and the flowers are all dead. The grass is starting to get patchy. So this is the time where you really have to clean up your gardens, clean up the front of your property. Make sure it just shows well, and don't just take it. Just say that it's a season. It's a fall season. Everyone's house looks like this. I mean, if you're selling your house has to look better than other people's houses. So make sure you're sprucing up your curb appeal.
You know what this means, eh, Frank? Now's the time of year that Paul's got to hire somebody to clean the garden.
I know, right? This is the time of year I got to make that phone call.
521-DOC, 521-8255. We'll be right back after this.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
We are back. Paul Rushforth, Frank Napolitano. Frank, I don't think I've ever asked you this, but is there any scenario in which you can buy a house with less than 5% down?
Well, there is. There is still a program called the Flex Down Payment. You still need the 5% down, but you can borrow it. Generally, the rule of thumb is you cannot borrow the down payment. But there's still a couple of lenders that offer, the default insurers offer it, but a lot of lenders would prefer not to offer it. But there are a couple of traditional lenders, not the big banks, but there's still traditional lenders who offer it. And what they'll do is they will account for the fact. So let's say your down payment is $25,000. So if you're taking the $25,000 out of your line of credit, they will account for a payment on that $25,000, which equates to 3% of the balance per month, so $750 per month. So as long as you still meet the qualifying requirements based on the fact that there's a $750 loan payment based on the fact that you borrowed that down payment, then you could possibly be able to buy a home with without any down payment.
Not really an option for first-time buyers, though.
Difficult unless you've got a really, really, really high income, because all of a sudden you start adding $750 and your mortgage payment and property taxes and potentially any other debt. Again, lenders are human by nature. The underwriters are human by nature too. So if somebody's making $150,000 a year and they apply for the flex equity, the first thing the underwriter is going to say is, if they're making $150,000 a year, how come they don't have any savings? So that's just a common, you know, nature thing that an underwriter, because that's what underwriters do, right? The last questions. I mean, their job is to make sure that the risk is minimized for both the bank and the default insurer. And they have to do everything that they can to make sure that when they underwrite it, it doesn't go south.
So it could be an option if you're young enough, you haven't had a time to put away savings, but you're making enough money, right?
That's where it works, right? If you're young, you know, you're a young individual and you just came out of university and you've got these great paying jobs, you've got a young couple that got great paying jobs and they've been paying off their student debt but not necessarily putting money towards savings, and all of a sudden an opportunity arises where they can buy a house potentially from a builder. So in that circumstance I can see where it works. I could see where maybe a marriage or a relationship has gone south and then you get together with someone else and again you're starting together and you haven't had time to save. I could see that happen. Again, there's circumstances. We have to explain the circumstances, and it's up to the underwriter and the default insurer then to decide whether the risk level is too great or not.
Yeah, and it helps to have a good relationship with them.
It doesn't hurt at all. I mean, being able to pick up the phone and call underwriters and call default insurers and explain your case goes a long way, because you are just a number to them. As far as where it gets approved in Toronto, where a lot of them are housed, but a lot of the relationships are with local people, or even if the underwriter's in Toronto, the lender underwriter, if you can sell it to the lender underwriter, then they've got a good relationship with the default insurer. So therefore, they can promote it on your behalf as well.
Paul, we were kidding about gas prices earlier, but do you see now that gas prices are getting up as high as they are, that people are going to think twice before moving further out of the city?
I don't think so. I think that yes, it's definitely a factor. But don't forget, it's also cheaper in the outskirts of the city. And with this pandemic, people are able to work from home. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that are moving to the outskirts just for affordability. I mean, it's trying to buy a house in the core. It's tough. I mean, the prices are astronomical in the core of the city, suburbia. And so there's a lot of people that are moving to the outskirts regardless of the gas prices. But I'm sure if someone's still at work and they're working downtown or they're working, half an hour to 45 minutes away from their work, they might think twice about moving to the outskirts, mainly because of the gas prices. But there's so many people that are still working from home, even with the world slowly starting to open up, there's still a ton of businesses that have not come back to work. And so therefore there's no commute. And that's why there's so much attention on the outskirts of Ottawa for the last you know, 18 months, we saw the average sale price in the outskirts of Ottawa skyrocket because of the people moving out there because of the prices in the core too high.
How do they compare, say, in the last month with the core? Going up about the same or prices staying steady?
Well, I think they're probably staying steady, but if you look at just year to date, the core has gone up, the outskirts have gone up 24%, where the core has gone up, what is the core gone up, about 17 or 18%. So the outskirts are definitely rising quicker than the core, but keep in mind, they had a lot of room to rise. I mean, when you look at some small towns where the average sale price was in the, you know, in the threes, it's now in the fours. You know, but you look in the core, you're in the sevens, right, as an average sale price. So it's...
Yeah, 20% of the threes is a lot different, right?
Exactly, exactly. But there are some places now that are getting less and less affordable where people used to flock to them because it was so cheap to buy in, you know, Armprior, Pakenham, or Limoges, or Embrum. It was so cheap to buy out there, where now it's kind of like, the prices have gone up quite drastically that, you know, you're looking at a townhome in the fives in the outskirts or the six in the core. So it's not as advantageous right now to move to the outskirts as it was in the past.
Do you guys think this is permanent now, the working from home?
No, I think most companies, I believe, will probably go to some sort of hybrid model. I'm definitely bringing my people back to work, but I am going to have flexibility with them, you know, because there are still challenges with some families, and there's different degrees of, you know, fear with COVID. I mean, I have some people in the company that are, you know, scared crapless of COVID, and I have others that are like, no, let's get this world rolling, you know?
No, but I'm thinking, let's say this is all said and done. There is no more COVID. I think we're in a new world now, right, where it's not going to go back to the way it was 100%.
Yeah, I think there's going to be lots of flexibility and adaptation, and I think you're right. I don't think it's going to go back to the way we were, just like a lot of businesses are not going to go to the way they were. I mean, I know my business has changed for the better and changed for the good. That we're doing things now that I don't know why we weren't doing them before, but now that we're doing all these different things, it's like we've adapted, and this is the new norm. Just like, and to be honest with you, Steve, I don't think we're ever going to not be living with COVID. I think COVID's the new flu. Like, I think we're always going to be living with COVID. So it's right now, it's, I know this is a real estate and mortgage show, but right now it's learning to live with COVID is what we have to adapt to. And it's just, you know, the rules have all changed. And then now it's just, you know, the world's changed and we just have to adapt to it.
Yeah, I'm asking mainly that because if you buy in the core now, would it be a better investment 3 years from now?
Well, you know, you've asked the question before, you know, if you're buying in the outskirts, what's going to happen when people start coming back to work? Are those areas going to start going down when people start selling their properties there because they want to move closer to the core? It's hard to know. It's hard to know. I mean, I don't think either is going to be a bad investment. I think both buying in the core or buying in the outskirts, I think both are still going to continue to go up. We've seen a shift to bigger properties and more land and more yard, which we hadn't seen before. And I think that's probably here to stay. I think this COVID and this pandemic of being locked down has taught us a huge lesson. And I think this is the new norm. And I think you're going to see both areas, the outskirts and the core, continue to go up in the average sale price.
Just before we get to birthdays, do you see qualifying rates going up anytime soon, Frank?
I don't think so. I mean, it's possible it can happen in 2022, but I don't see it happening anytime soon. It's certainly not been talked about by anyone. I think the next step for the housing industry and the mortgage industry is the budget. We're hoping that at some point in early 2022, there's going to be a budget, and some of the campaign promises that were made to get the Liberal government in power, you know, in respect to housing and to some of the rule changes, and hopefully, you know, building more homes so that we can get past the supply and demand issue, which I think is going to be years, maybe a decade before we can handle it. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. So that's what, you know, that's what I think will happen moving forward. I think the next step is to wait for the budget to come out.
What do you think, Paul? It didn't sound too bad for a guy in his 60th year, huh?
Yeah, seriously, man. Yeah, the voice wasn't crackling at all, like an old man you are.
Nope.
Birthdays, Frank?
Speaking of birthdays, good friend of mine, Joel Ranieri, who works at Villa Marconi, celebrated his birthday. He's about your age, Steve, significantly older than Paul and I. Scott Hunter, one of our top agents, celebrate his birthday this week, and my beautiful niece, Bianca Bernardi, celebrating her birthday this coming week. And I want to give a shout out to Sherry Pang. We did a fundraiser last night, or Sherry ran a fundraiser, virtual, unfortunately, again this year, for Crohn's and colitis, and raised a good amount of money, and nice. Had great MC like Darren Pang and Mark Mathot. Brady Kachuk came on live with us. So congratulations, Sherry. Great job as always.
Nice. Paul, anything?
Yeah, I just want to wish Angie White, my amazing office manager, a great trip to Mexico this week. And I did look at the report. It's raining all 7 days.
Paul at PaulRushforth.com, Frank N. at MortgageBrokersOttawa.com. Have a great week, guys.
Have a great week.
Thanks, everyone. And please continue to support local businesses and charities, everyone.